Friday is the final day the Green Bay Packers have exclusive negotiating rights with their pending free agents, and so we're bringing in Scott McKenna of the Talkin' Smack blog for his free agency predictions. It's all coming up on Cheesehead TV's Railbird Central next. Welcome to Railbird Central at Cheesehead TV. I'm your host, Brian Caribou. We're talking some Packers football. It is episode number 499 of Railbird Central. We'll be unveiling the lineup of guests for our milestone number 500 later in the show, so stay tuned. But right now, we have our guest on the line for his monthly engagement on the show, the first Friday of every month. We have Scott McKenna of the Talkin' Smack blog joining us on the phone.
Expert interview.
Scott, how are you doing this morning?
I'm great, Brian. How are you?
Very good. Glad to have you on the show. As usual, free agency is about to start. Friday is the final day of exclusive negotiating rights. So what we're going to do today is kind of run through the Packers' list of free agents and kind of predict whether they're gone or whether they're going to stay or what's going to happen with them. And there's been so much talk this week about Randall Cobb because he's yet to sign an extension with the Packers. The word is the Packers have offered, from Charles Robinson of Yahoo Sports reported yesterday, Randall Cobb balked, the quote-unquote, the word is balked, at an offer averaging about $10 million a season. Scott, I'll start off by asking, what is Randall Cobb worth?
It's a good question. I thought $10 million might even be rich for him. Slot receiver, does have a lot of talents, and it really fits into the offensive scheme. There's no doubt about it. But I thought $10 million might be the digit that would get him. Freakily, it's almost freakish, though, because you see how much money some of these teams have, especially the Raiders, who, with Reggie McKenzie having ties to the Packers, very easy for him to overbid for a guy like Cobb and to box the Packers out of the picture, so to speak. But I thought $10 million would get the job done.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I thought, you know, maybe $10 million might be a little bit rich, but I mean, I can certainly understand a deal in that neighborhood. But the problem is it as you allude to the Oakland Raiders, it only takes one. You know, it only takes one team to think he's worth 11 or 12, and that's where he's going. I mean, that's the problem the Packers are dealing with here, and kind of the issue with free agency as a whole is it doesn't take all 32 teams to collectively decide how much Randall Cobb is worth. His worth is what one team will give him, basically.
You're right. Well, you know, here's the thing about Cobb. I'm first and foremost, I'm going to believe that Randall Cobb is going to be a Green Bay Packer until he signs somewhere else. For me, he seems like the type of guy where football is more than just about the money. And, you know, I think he really wants to have a career that is telling and meaningful. And I think he's got, you know, he just appears to have such great camaraderie with, you know, Rodgers and Nelson and Adams and just really fits into the locker room as a whole. So, you know, somebody who used to play athletics as well. I just think that there's something to be said about enjoying the environment in the locker room that you're playing in. And, I hope that he takes that into consideration instead of, just running for something that's unknown that might pay an extra $1 million or $2 a year. And then the other thing that I wish that people would take into consideration when they're negotiating is the cost of living. I mean, what's the difference of the cost of living in Green Bay, Wisconsin compared to Oakland? It's significant. So, I guess I just look at it, and I'm going to believe that Randall Cobb isn't going to be a Green Bay Packer until he does sign anywhere else.
Is there anything to the notion that here we watch in the past few weeks, the Packers releasing guys like A.J. Hawk and Brad Jones, and you kind of thought even at the time these guys were signed that the Packers may be overpaying them a little bit. Now, here's a guy, Randall Cobb, who you think maybe here's a guy who's actually worth overpaying for, where you had your doubts at least about guys like AJ Hawk and Brad Jones, and maybe even stronger than just your doubts. But is Randall Cobb the type of guy you overpay for?
You know, it's a really good question. My first thought is that, you know, he's a slot receiver, which, you know, what did Julian Edelman make last year? What did Danny Amendola make last year? And yeah. I'm not saying that they're in the same caliber as Cobb necessarily, but Edelman was he showed up in the playoffs as big as anybody, especially in the Super Bowl. So, you know, you can find slot receivers, throughout the league, and you know, people can generally be able to step in and make a fairly big impact in quick fashion. You see, you look around the league and you see who these names are and where they were drafted. Generally, the slot receiver isn't the guy that you pick in the first or second round. But even though I know Cobb was a second round pick, so do you spend $10 to $12 million on a slot receiver? I'm not sure that that's the best investment of money. With that being said, the Cobb and Nelson and Adams receiver tandem just looked so lethal at times last year, and you'd love to have that around for the next 3 to 5 years or so.
Yeah, I'm there with you. Randall Cobb is a guy who's 5'10" and 100 and I think less than 190 pounds. I mean, I'm worried about injuries to an extent, which makes me think, you know, maybe he's not worth the 10 or $11 million a year. The Packers have the option of, you know, going through the NFL draft and getting a guy like Nelson Aguilar of USC or a Tyler Lockett of Kansas State. Very much the same type of player than Randall Cobb. I might even say these guys might be better than Randall Cobb, at least, you know, kind of from their college film. They're a little bit bigger. I might think, you know, they're good replacements perhaps, but I mean, not that I don't want Randall Cobb. I'd love to see him back, but we got to go through a long list of players here, Scott, but just Randall Cobb, is he back?
As I said earlier, I'm saying yes until I see him sign elsewhere. I really thought that, you know,
that's not an answer. I want to say, I want to hear a yes or no.
I'm saying yes.
Okay, fair enough. Let's move on because we got a long list here. Brian Bulaga, another guy who's, you know, maybe not going to get Randall Cobb money, but still going to get sign a very lucrative contract, whether with the Packers or elsewhere. What's your thoughts on Brian Bulaga?
I also believe Bulaga will be back. I'm hoping, you know, I personally believe that he's the top priority, and I really feel like, you know, when we got that, when we have those five guys across the line with Lane and Sitton and Lindsley and Bakhtiari, it's just the line was such a strength this year. And I really hope he doesn't touch the open market, because then he might get some offers for left tackle money, and we can get him as a right tackle, I'd hope. With that being said, I do believe Bulaga is signed, and it wouldn't surprise me if something happens in the next 24 to 30 hours.
Yeah, it makes sense. I've said before, or in articles at Cheesehead TV, you know, the best right tackles in the NFL make $6 to $7 million a year. That's like the ceiling for a right tackle. I thought it was ingenious of the Packers, really, to make Brian Bulaga a right tackle when they kind of had the choice last season of, you know, him or David Bakhtiari, because it kind of caps a little bit his earning money. Do you see him exceeding like $7 million a year?
I it wouldn't shock me if he did. You know, there isn't an abundance of tackles on the open market this year. And with that being said, you know, as Ted Thompson always says, they only make so many. Good Lord, only makes so many of those big guys. So it wouldn't shock me if he's somebody that they have to give a little bit more than market value. It definitely helped Bulaga that he stayed healthy last year for the most part. And with that being said, it wouldn't surprise me if something comes between $7 and $8 million a year.
So back or not?
I say yes.
Yes, he's back. All right. Cornerbacks, starting with Tremon Williams. The report yesterday from Bob McGinn of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel that Tremon Williams rejected a 2-year deal worth $8 million. That's an average of $4 million a season. Also reporting that the Seattle Seahawks are going to go after him. What's your impressions on Tremon Williams?
You know, first and foremost, you know, Tremon is one of my favorite Packers of the last decade or so. So it would be really disappointing to not see him back. I will say it's somewhat surprising to hear guys like Cobb and Tremon reject the deals that seem very competitive, and they seem worthwhile and something that would have that would be beyond interest peaking, if you will. In past years, it feels like those are deals that got signed, maybe. And this year, it hasn't happened, which has me, you know, biting the fingernails just a little bit. My thought is that cornerback is going to be the toughest decision that Ted Thompson has to make, because I really think the depth at cornerback was also a really a positive attribute to the roster, a real strength to the roster last year. And right now he's going to have a tough decision because, well, Tremon is, you know, 31 going on 32. We've seen players that they fall off quickly at cornerback at that age. With that being said, I see Tremon coming back. I see Tremon coming back at a 3-year deal. Roughly going to be around $5 million on average is what I'm projecting, but I do see Tremon Williams coming back as well.
I am the opposite. I do not see Tremon Williams coming back. I think at 32 years old, especially if there's any interest from another NFL team, I think he might take it up because, you know, I very much think that Tremon Williams may have a productive year or two left, but I don't think he has 3 or 4. And I don't know, you know, these reports go out in the media that he's seeking a high amount of guaranteed money. He's seeking $5 million a season. I don't know how much of that is agent talk and how much is you know, whatever. But I personally, if I had to predict, I don't think Tremon Williams is coming back. Not that I'm closing the door on it. I think if Devon House leaves, maybe there's a greater chance that Tremon Williams comes back. There's more money available if Randall Cobb doesn't sign. So I think this transitions right into our discussion about Devon House here, the next cornerback on the list. Your thoughts on Devon House, Scott?
I think Devon House will be overpaid to somebody. They'll see him as a starter. They'll overlook his injury history, and he'll likely be gone.
I mean, is he what kind of deal is he going to sign? I've heard predictions like he could get up to about $7 million a season. You know, basically becoming somebody's number one corner out there.
Wouldn't stun me. It wouldn't stun me. I could project somewhere in the $6 to $7 million mark going to a guy like House. And you look at some of the small sample size that you've had from when he's been healthy, and he's been aggressive in run support. He's long, he's lanky, he can run. You know, there's a lot to really like about Devon House. Would I give him $6 to $7 million if I was a general manager? I wouldn't. But you know, it's as you said earlier, all it takes is one, and there are a lot of teams with a lot of money this year to play with. And it wouldn't surprise me if somebody goes shopping for a house.
I think he's gone too. I think somebody gives him a lot of money that the Packers aren't going to want to match. But the flip side of the coin, the Packers would get a compensatory draft pick and a fairly decent one if he's getting a deal around $7 million a year. That's probably like a fourth or a fifth round draft choice that the Packers could get next year. So there's that to look forward to, at least rounding out the cornerbacks. Jarrett Bush got arrested earlier this week. At least he's not being charged, so this is a rather minor thing. Does that factor all into the decision whether the Packers re-sign Jarrett Bush or not, Scott?
I don't think it factors in, and I also don't see Bush coming back either. He's largely been a player that has been a gunner on special teams, and I really thought that in the limited opportunities that Demetri Goodson had last year, I thought he played decent at that role, and it wouldn't surprise me if Thompson rolls the dice and has Goodson at that sort of that sixth or seventh or sixth cornerback spot, I should say, and the gunner as well on special teams. If he rolls the dice with Goodson as being able to take Bush's his role there.
Interesting. I'm going to say the opposite with this one. Not that I'm fairly confident about it, but I'm going to say Jarrett Bush comes back one final year on a 1 year minimal deal. Especially in light of my other predictions that maybe Tremont Williams and Devon House are gone, so maybe that they just want a little bit depth there. So yeah, I'll say he's coming back for 1 year. Not that he's really, in the plans at cornerback, but kind of, maybe his swan song on special teams for Jarrett Bush. We're talking to Scott McKenna of the Talk and Smack blog here at Cheesehead TV's Railbird Central on a Friday morning, episode number 499 of Railbird Central. Let's talk about the nose tackles here. Let's kind of put them together. BJ Raji and Latroy Guyon, are these guys coming back?
I think both are back. I really do. I think that Raji comes back probably a one-year deal, something similar to he signed last year, maybe even a little bit more discounted, seeing that he didn't play last year. Would love to see Raji come back on a two-year deal for something around $2 million a year. Don't see it happening, but that would be what it like. I'd hedge my bet that Raji's going to be signing for 1 year. And with Guyon, my take on Guyon is this. If Guyon is in the NFL this year, he will be with the Green Bay Packers. And I know there's still stuff that needs to be figured out there. If he's in the NFL, my take is that Guyon will be playing for the Packers on another short-term contract that will likely be very cap-friendly.
Agreed on both accounts. These guys are not going to cost the Packers a lot of money. I think they'll be getting rather minimal deals, so I think they're worth the risk, and I think they'll be back. Any interest in a Vince Wilfork, who we learned yesterday the Patriots will not be paying his big bonus coming up, and he'll hit free agency?
I mean, how could you not be excited by the name, right? Do I think it'll happen? I don't. But yes, I think he obviously fits the Packers' defensive scheme. There's a cost associated with his name as well, so you'd have to consider that. And I think a lot of that would then depend on what happens with Cobb and Bulaga. But clearly he's a name that would intrigue.
Yeah, I think you at least kick the tires on a Vince Wilfork, perhaps. I same way, like, I'm not sure it happens, but this is a guy who I think the Packers may actually be interested in. But again, it only takes one. Chances are there's going to be another team out there that maybe is willing to pay Vince Wilfork a little more than the Packers, perhaps. Let's lump the quarterbacks together. Matt Flynn and Scott Tolzien, are they coming back?
My projection at this stage is that the Packers will go into next year with two quarterbacks. And I think that the quarterbacks will be, Rodgers and Tolzien. I think we saw that Flynn last year just didn't look the same as he did the year before. When he seemed to have more of a fire in his belly, and maybe it was a sense of urgency for the times that he was in the game rather than this year when he was just sort of in mop-up duty. But I think Tolzien really showed something in the preseason last year. And it's my my intuition or my gut says that the Packers will bring Tolzien back. Whether Flynn is signed or not, I don't know for certain, but I do not see Flynn on the 53-man roster next year. And it wouldn't surprise me if they're bringing in either a late-round draft pick or an undrafted free agent that might be appetizing to stash on the practice squad next year. And I see Tolzien as a part of the roster. Don't see Flynn, I guess, would be my prediction.
Agreed here as well. I think Scott Tolzien is actually a higher free agent priority than most people realize, and I don't think Flynn will be back. Who knows? Maybe they sign him after the draft and they don't like what happened in the draft, or some guys they like are gone, but I don't think he'll be part of the 53-man roster. Maybe just I'm going to run through a list here, Scott, of these guys. Just, you know, give me a sentence or two on them and your prediction whether they'll be back or not. Let's start with linebacker Jamari Lattimore.
I'm going to say no. Lattimore will not be back. He had an opportunity to really seize the day last year and didn't do so. So I'm going to say no.
Yeah, maybe he comes back on a one-year minimal deal, but I'll say no as well. Running back Duwan Harris.
I'm also going to say no. He too, I thought, had an opportunity last year, and you know, he didn't excite on special teams, that was for sure, and showed that maybe he had some limitations to his game. So I'm going to say no.
Yeah, I'm going to say no too. Not that I'm closing the door entirely on him, but the prediction is no. Restricted free agents here. Now, these guys, you would have to sign them to a deal that's, you know, probably roughly around $1.5 million if you're going to tender these guys. So let's start with Jarrett Boykin.
I say no. You know, Boykin as well, another huge opportunity last year to make an impact and really be the type of guy that could have solidified a nice contract for himself and didn't show up. And then you consider the three draft picks from last year. I don't envision Boykin around next year, whether Cobb is back or not.
Yeah, it could hinge maybe upon what happens with Randall Cobb. Just maybe they want him back for depth if Cobb leaves, but I'll say no too. How about tackle, or just maybe guard tackle, Don Barclay?
He'll absolutely be back, and I think he's a key to the depth, on the offensive line. And in some ways, we missed him last year. I don't think that you can deny that, but I will say that Barclay will absolutely be back.
Yep, agreed here as well. I think Don Barclay will be back for sure, and especially so if Brian Bulaga happens to be gone. Sean Richardson, the safety.
I think Richardson will be back. He's continued to grow, and I think that he showed glimpses of goodness where he's been able to really help out on special teams. We saw them put together some packages as the year went along that seemed to fit into getting Richardson on the field. So I think Richardson will be back.
Yep, I thought so as well. $1.5 million, a little bit high for a player of Richardson's caliber, but I think they pay it anyway. Final guy, exclusive rights free agent, Chris Banjo. Is he back or not?
I would say no. I do think that he has added some stuff on special teams, but I think he's just really limited on the defensive side of the ball, and I think they'll be able to find an upgrade there either in the draft or as an undrafted free agent.
It's true they may find an upgrade, but I just predict they re-sign him because they can always cut him later.
That might be the case as well. I can get on board with that. It wouldn't shock me if they sign him. I don't see him on the roster next year.
All right, we're going to do one final segment here with Scott, and it's going to be brief, and what we're going to do is kind of go through, do a brief NFL draft talk, and go through two inside linebacker prospects here for the Green Bay Packers. I've thought that Eric Kendricks, the linebacker from UCLA, is the better prospect. Just talking with Scott outside of Railbird Central, he thinks that Stephon Anthony of Clemson is the better prospect. So I know Scott has to go soon, but so maybe we'll get his thoughts and I'll share mine once he goes off air. But Scott, you like Stephon Anthony of Clemson as a prospect, as a player. Basically, make your case, and afterwards I'll make mine of why you like him better than Eric Kendricks.
You know, and first and foremost, let me say that I think Kendricks is a really nice ball player. Mm-hmm. And also that Anthony is a guy that, frankly, I've been doing a lot of homework on after the season, which always makes me a little bit uncomfortable. But, you know, you're a product of where you live, and as far as what football you're watching, mostly, I've always believed. And since I was born in Wisconsin, I watch a lot of Big Ten football. I did live in Miami for a while, so I'm a Canes fan, which you would have thought would have lent me to watching some of Anthony at Clemson. But, you know, the Canes just didn't play Clemson over the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. There wasn't a lot of that lingering effect of being able to watch him live as much as I would have liked to. Mm-hmm. Did catch him a couple of times last year. Really didn't have him targeted as a first-round pick. But don't love the draft this year. And with that being said, when I look at Anthony and why he might be a fit for us at number 30 is, you know, last year I think I told you that one of the first things I look at with regards to draft picks is how did they play when the lights were on? And with Anthony, you look at where he had his best games last year when he played number one Florida State. Anthony was a stud. He got to the quarterback. He came on the blitz. He dropped in coverage. He made tackles behind the line of scrimmage. In the run game, we're talking, he's 6'3", 240-plus of gifted athleticism. He ran a 4.56 40. He can do it all. He gets sideline to sideline. He can drop in coverage. And importantly, and this is a facet of his game that I like a lot better than what Kendricks can do, is he rushes the quarterback. And, you know, Capers, the defense has really been operating at all cylinders. It's happened when he's able to come on some of those inside blitzes from the inside linebacker position. It's my opinion and my belief that as I've really studied Anthony, he might do that better. I believe that he does do that better than any inside linebacker that's entering the draft. And I think that that's a real value-added asset that that he'll be able to bring to the defense should he be added with the 30th pick in the draft. Additionally, you look at him in the Ohio State game, going back to how he performed when the lights were on to close out his junior year. In Ohio State's last possession, game got sealed on an interception by Anthony. So, you know, he's made big plays at crucial times in his past. He has the length that I think the Packers would be looking for to sort of mirror the presence that Clay Matthews gave the Packers over the last half of the season last year at inside linebacker. He's got the sideline to sideline speed, and I think you know, as the more I study on him and the more I like I look at him, and you know, you watch the Senior Bowl as well, and he just looks like he belongs. With that being said, it's not a knock on Kendricks. I'm a fan of Kendricks, but the more I watch of Anthony, the more I see him as a true fit for the Green Bay Packers in the heart of their 3-4 defense.
Fair enough. Scott, I'll give my thoughts on Kendricks off air because I know you got to go, but thanks a lot for joining us. As usual, we're glad to have you on the show. Have a good day and take care, man.
You do the same, and excited for number 500 next week, brother.
All right.
Yourself.
Thanks a lot. See ya.
You bet. Bye.
Scott McKenna of the Talkin' Smack blog joining us here on a Friday morning at Cheesehead TV's Railbird Central. So he gave his thoughts on Stephon Anthony. My thoughts on Eric Kendricks. I think he's the top prospect at inside linebacker. I do feel the same way. I've kind of come to this conclusion now. I do think Eric Kendricks and Stephon Anthony are the number one and number two inside linebackers in this year's draft class, in my opinion. So my preference is Kendricks over Anthony, but if Kendricks were off the board, I would be okay with Anthony too. Even ahead of Shaq Thompson of Washington, ahead of Paul Dawson of TCU, I like these two guys the best. The reason I like Eric Kendricks is he is so solid in every phase of the game. Maybe there's a little less playmaking ability than Stephon Anthony, if you look at Anthony's tackle for loss numbers, he seems to get into the backfield a little bit more, but I don't think the edge is so big that it overcomes what Kendricks provides. Kendricks is just solid, and it's that way in every phase of the game, from run defense to pass coverage. And I think what the Packers need more than anything, not that Anthony's bad at pass coverage, we just talked about how he got an interception, or Scott did, in a big bowl game over a ranked team. But Kendricks, I think, is your three down player. And, you know, you even heard Mike McCarthy at the NFL Combine talk about how they need four down players, guys who are going to play special teams. But I mean, I think the thing the Packers didn't have is you couldn't depend on A.J. Hawk being on the field on third down. He was so slow, he couldn't cover guys. They brought Brad Jones on for the dime packages just because, you know, that was the only thing he could do. He had a little bit of nice length to him and a little bit more speed than A.J. Hawk, although not by much. That Brad Jones wasn't a three down player. Eric Kendricks is a three down player. And I'll tell you what, folks, the intangible, and here's where maybe I think I have an advantage over some of, you know, the other analysts at the NFL Combine, got to see Eric Kendricks up front and in person at his press conference. And let me tell you, Eric Kendricks is the best leader you're going to find at inside linebacker. The guy was so well-spoken, and I hesitate to use that word a little bit because there's like this stigma attached to like the phrase well-spoken, that it only applies to black players or something, you know. There's a debate about that. But Eric Kendricks is so impressive in person. He is so smart. He is such high character that I think this is the type of guy you want as the leader of your defense for the next decade plus. The type of guy who can be a leader of men, the type of guy who you're going to rely upon for relaying signals and getting guys lined up on that side of the defense. Let me tell you, he's just so impressive to talk to in person that's who you want. And I'll admit, I didn't get to see Stephon Anthony at the Combine. I don't know what happened. You know, I interviewed practically 200 players, and I never saw Stephon Anthony come through the media room at the Combine. I'm not sure what happened. I totally wanted to see him, regardless, Eric Kendricks is just so far at the top. I don't think the Packers, unless somebody absolutely falls to them, like maybe Trey Waynes, the cornerback, or a Danny Shelton on the defensive line, unless those guys fall to the Packers, when they're on the clock with a 30th draft choice, I don't think the Packers can pass up Eric Kendricks. I'm just saying it right now. They cannot pass Eric Kendricks up if he is there. So I love the guy. He's a three-down player, can do the run and pass. I think he's got playmaking ability. I've said it before. If you haven't seen it already, and you can find video at draftbreakdown.com, go watch film of Eric Kendricks in the Virginia game. He had a pick six for a touchdown. He forced a fumble that another player returned for a touchdown. He was a tackling machine. It was an incredible, I mean, that shows you what he can do, and he does have playmaking ability. This is the guy you want. He's the number one inside linebacker prospect. You know, like I said, unless somebody absolutely falls in the draft,
Eric Kendricks is the guy you want. I wouldn't even be hesitate to trade up for him to secure him possibly. I would go that far. I love the guy and think he's going to help out the defense immensely. So that's what I feel like there. Just briefly here.
Packers news of the day.
Yesterday on Thursday, the Packers made it official, the signing of linebacker Josh Francis of the Indoor Football League of the Wichita Falls Nighthawks. This was actually reported more than a week ago. Kind of unsure why it took more than a week to become official. Packers announcing it comes across the NFL's transaction wire on Thursday. I've speculated that, you know, maybe it just took that long for, you know, him to come up to Green Bay, pass a physical, and for it to become official. And maybe just during the off season, there was an urgency for that to happen. So maybe that's why it took more than a week to happen. But anyway, that was the news yesterday that it actually became official. Packers, you know, after releasing Brad Jones, AJ Hawk, adding a little bit of the depth at the inside linebacker position. Maybe not a guy who's going to even be on the 53-man roster, but hey, it's worth taking a look during the offseason when your rosters are at 90-man. He's the type of guy you can cut, and it's not going to cost you anything. So no harm in taking a look at the guy.
The day ahead.
In the world of the Green Bay Packers on a Friday. Today, like I said, last day for exclusive negotiating rights with players. Tomorrow, Saturday, 3 p.m. Central Time, the three-day negotiating window opens in which the Packers can talk to players from other teams, and the other side is players who are under contract with the Packers. They can start negotiating with other teams as well. And you've got to think, like, a guy like Randall Cobb might start doing that with other teams, or Tremont Williams with the Seahawks, or Devon House with other teams. So this all starts tomorrow. So maybe keep your fingers crossed today. The Packers are really active and going to get something done with Randall Cobb, perhaps. We'll see if that happens. I'm not sure. We've gone through free agency a lot already, so not going to rehash it again, but just so you know how it all works, the three-day window opens tomorrow, 3 p.m. Central Time. Free agency is upon us. The sands in the hourglass are running out, as I wrote in today's Packers calendar at Cheesehead TV. Looking forward to how all this plays out in the next few days. And that brings us to the drum roll, please. Episode number 500 of Railbird Central on Monday. I am excited to announce a lineup of guests. And I will, first of all, right off the bat, say this. We have a new special start time because it's the 500th episode to accommodate more than one guest on the show. Yes, we have more than one. We have, first of all, Packers cornerback Casey Hayward joining us on the show. Will be definitely interesting to get his perspective at the start of free agency. He's a guy that, you know, could move up the Packers depth chart real quick if a few of his teammates are gone. But there are also guys who are his friends, so maybe he wants them back as well. And not to say, I mean, there's room on a defense for definitely more than two cornerbacks when you're talking about the dime and nickel packages. So, be exciting to talk to Casey Hayward. And our second guest on the show on Monday, we have Sports Illustrated's Peter King, who has his now own website, mmqb.com, joining us on the show, pretty much the dean of NFL writers, Hall of Fame voter, Peter King joining us, excited to get his thoughts basically on the eve of free agency. You can expect we'll be talking a lot about that. And depending on what happens over the course of the next few days, I don't really know what we'll be talking about, because all of a sudden, if Randall Cobb signs a contract, we could be talking to Peter King about Randall Cobb having re-signed with the Packers, or we could be talking to him about Randall Cobb potentially signing with other teams. So this will be an interesting weekend to see how things unfold and what will transpire to set the table for episode number 500 on Monday. So just coincidence that this really happened in an exciting time in the NFL. So Casey Hayward and Peter King on the show on Monday. Really cool. I'm excited for it. And you guys, the listeners who are listening to this, you make it all possible. We are the most frequently podcasted show on the Packers on the internet. The longest tenured in terms of number of episodes. And we're talking internet exclusive, not radio shows that air on the airwaves and then podcast their shows later. This is the longest tenured Packers podcast on the internet. I'm glad to host it. Glad you're a part of it. You guys make it all possible. So thanks for listening. As I usually do, if my call to action here, if you have not already, give us a rating on iTunes. It helps get the word out. It helps people see that this is a podcast worth listening to on the internet. So we have no paywall here at Cheesehead TV, no subscriptions. Everything's free. The one tiny thing we ask you, to just take a moment, give us a rating on iTunes. We'd greatly appreciate it if you would. So we'll be looking forward to episode number 500 on Monday. But that'll do it for episode number 499. Thank you to Scott McKenna of the Talking Smack blog for joining us. Thank you for listening to us every Monday, Wednesday, Friday at 8:30 a.m. Central Time, the live edition podcasted later. We'll see you later, folks. On behalf of everybody at Cheesehead TV, I'm Brian Caribou. I leave you today with a song called Rosie by String Cheese Incident on Psy Fidelity Records. See you later, everyone. Go Pack. Go.